Stars, El Pacifico, Bill Hendry.
I don't think that words are enough to tell the parents of Natalie Holloway.
I haven't seen him personally, but he's very close.
Mr. Chairman, I just wanted to assure my colleague that Arizona does, in fact, share a border.
I've flown a lot in my lifetime. I fly transatlantically a lot.
World-famous Phil Hendry Show here every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast and 4 a.m. on the East Coast. This is a news, talk, and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about. This show, Truth Is Our Bitch, and we will go anywhere to find that, including through the looking glass every night. This is the number one most creative radio show in the history of the planet. Welcome back to our program. What are you looking at?
Well, that's a pretty tall description, what you done there.
You know, look at man, I learned something from the Rolling Stones when they said the world's greatest rock and roll band. Of course they're not the world's greatest rock and roll band. They're far from being the world's greatest rock and roll band, but they say it, don't they?
Yeah, you say it enough times, it's going to be true.
That's what we're going to say. We are the number one most creative radio show in the history of the world. If we say it enough times...
Guess people are going to believe it, but still, lying...
Oh yeah, okay, I'm lying, huh? I don't think I'm lying. I think we work our ass off on this show, and I think it pays off. What do you think of that?
Well, just lying about it.
Yeah.
Oh, boy, thanks a lot, guys. You think the Stones are the best rock and roll band in the world?
Well, they say they are.
Do you think they're the greatest rock and roll band in the world, yes or no?
Well, they say they are.
Well, now I've seen it all.
What?
So you guys can't bring yourselves to say the Rolling Stones suck. You got to say, well, they say they are, because they say they're the greatest rock and roll band in the world. And yet when I say we got the greatest radio show in the world, you guys are backing off of that.
Well, the Rolling Stones, I mean, there's a lot to digest. There's a lot to...
You shut up. 877-876-PHIL, world-famous Phil Hendry Show. Welcome back to our program. Don't forget our website, philhendryshow.com. That's philhendryshow.com. Go on over there and become a Backstage Pass member, and you can watch the live streaming audio of our radio show right now. You can watch us as we perform the show night after night after night after night after night. And you'll love it, man. And not only that, all kinds of perks. You are a Backstage Pass member, which means you can comment on our news feed. It means that you get guaranteed email response from Phil Hendry. It means you have access to every single solitary thing there is on our website in terms of the archives and the video and all kinds of stuff. In fact... we've got a big push coming up for our subscriptions. We've got a little bit of a freebie that we're going to be handing out to you guys. All right, 877-876-PHIL. Massachusetts governor objects to policy that gives condoms to elementary school, even over parents' objections. Get a load of this. And then we'll be talking with Mavis Leonard, who is a middle school teacher at Joyful Union Middle School in Bellflower, California. Governor Deval Patrick successfully used his bully pulpit Thursday to call the superintendent of a Cape Cod school district and urge her to revise a new policy allowing even elementary school students to receive free condoms without the knowledge of their parents. The policy also allows students to receive comments. What is that? Receive comments? What does that mean, receive comments? They get condoms without the knowledge of their parents. The policy also allows students to receive comments even if their parents object. What is that?
I don't know.
Yeah, that figures. Nonetheless, parents react to the new policy with Fox TV Channel 25 in Boston.
Seems it's a little too young.
I think it's a little too young. I mean, my kid's even, like I said, going into seventh, and that's too young for him, I would think. But kindergarten is way, way too little.
That's completely bizarre.
Okay. Even for Provincetown, huh?
Even for Provincetown.
I don't think it's right for little kids that young to have anything to do with condoms.
Well, there you go. Those are the parents talking about, and when we talk about little kids, we're talking about little kids. We're talking about kids that are first grade, second grade, six-year-old kids, all the way on up to fifth or sixth graders, which are the 10 and 11-year-old kids. With me is Mavis Leonard, a middle school teacher at Joyful Union Elementary School. It is a private school, and yet you are considering the same policy, which you got to understand, Ms. Leonard, is it just leaves a lot of people confused.
Well, I understand, Phil, the concerns of a lot of parents. I am not, I'm not deaf, I'm not blind to those concerns. But we also have a modern environment where young people are exposed to an awful lot before they are even in schooling. We have our students who are elementary school students, and they range similar to the school from ages of 6 to 11 years of age. They are exposed in a very modern society via the internet and television and all of the things that I think you would understand they're supposed to. And we cannot take the chance. We cannot take the chance that these young people are not protected. We cannot take the chance that others are not protected.
But do you honestly believe, and let's for one moment, never mind the protection aspect. The thing that really galls people, you know, is the fact that these are children who are receiving this over the objections of parents?
Well, I can't comment on... I did teach in the public school system for a great many years. And in the public school system, we had... we obviously had much more input from parents. We had a school board that gave us much more input from parents. And the school board, I did not allow that in my own teaching method. I did not allow that to slow me down. I would tell parents, you know, what I felt was right for the student, and I'd go ahead and do that.
Even over the objections of a school board?
Well, this was when I was teaching in public school. If the school board told me directly not to do something, I certainly would take that under advisement. But I know my students.
Well, let me ask you this. Before we get into your where you're at right now, which is a private school, if you're in a public school right now, you believe in this, right?
Yes, I do believe in it. And I have very good reasons for believing in it, Mr. Henry.
All right, fine. But if you go, if this the parent came to you and said, I don't want my son or my daughter, who is 6 years of age, receiving condoms, what would you say to them?
I would say, I appreciate very much, but we do have a public health concern with these six-year-olds. And I am, I would hope that they would see their way clear.
All right, let me just, you know, the psychodrama thing, you know. I'm an adult. Let's say that I am a parent at your school, okay?
Well, I would hope that those parents still...
No, but let's pretend like I'm a parent. I've come to you and I've said to you, Ms. Leonard, I do not approve of my daughter or my son getting a condom at the age of 6.
Well, I would say to you that is a decision, that is a public health decision. In your case, and I don't know you, but I would have to take it into consideration. In your case, Mr. Henry, I had looked at your children, I had looked at you and your wife, and I feel it is a consideration or not. Looking at your family, looking at the physical makeup of your family, looking at what I can tell of the health of your family just by looking at you from a distance, we have decided that your son or your daughter would benefit from this.
And looking at the health of my family, I don't understand. You're not a doctor.
No, I am not a doctor. You are absolutely right.
Well, then what do you mean looking at the health of my family from a distance? What does that mean?
Well, Mr. Henry, I'm not here to make jokes.
No, what does that mean?
It means as a teacher, I can look at the physiognomy or the physiology of a parent. You can look at whether or not this individual looks as if they have arthritic shoulders. Do they have stooped shoulders? Do they walk with a certain gait? Which is all indicative of whether there is in the family history, in the DNA history, in the genetic history of that family, whether there is or have been syphilitic.
And syphilitics.
That is correct, yes.
And you're telling me you can see that. You're not a doctor, but you can see that by looking at me getting out of my car.
No, I am not saying, Mr. Henry, I am not trying to say that I divine this. I am saying a cursory look, I might be able to look and see if there was if there were any syphilitics in your family tree. And then based partially on that. But the other consideration, Mr. Henry, that I think you have not allowed me to mention is that we live in a day and age where students and teachers, unfortunately, have been involved in very shameless and destructive sexual relationships.
And well, you're talking about the molestation of children by their teachers.
That is correct. And we also know that some of those students have engaged in this voluntarily. We are hopeful that by insisting that these students have these condoms, that these young people will not spread any disease to a teacher, a member of our staff, that a member of our staff would not spread a disease to these children.
It is so the passing out of condoms is a prophylactic, obviously, to keep disease transferring from students to teachers. Now, we're looking at a country where the incidence of teachers and students having sex that made the national news, while it seems to be on the rise, doesn't look as if it's an epidemic.
Well, we don't know that, Mr. Henry. I am trying, I am simply trying to protect our faculty from whatever disease that student might be bringing in.
But the idea of passing out condoms in case there are students infecting teachers while they're having sex, wouldn't it be better if you are counseling teacher and student and parents together that that kind of behavior is wrong?
It is absolutely a very high priority. But what do you do in the meantime? We cannot have members of our faculty put at risk by a student transferring a sex disease, sexually transmitted disease, onto a teacher.
And I also, before we take our break, I don't understand if you're telling me that by looking at me there are syphilitics in my family tree, and so therefore one of my children may be prone to transferring that disease. That's not an entire, that's not your entire rationale.
No, it's not the entire rationale. I'm just saying that it is part of what we consider to be important. When we give these condoms to these six-year-old children, we are not doing this to scandalize a child. We are doing it to protect our teachers from any disease. And if that child comes from a family where they're syphilitic.
All right, 877-876-PHIL, talking to Mavis Leonard from Joyful Union Congregation. Now, she's discussing this Massachusetts school policy that means that kids, elementary school kids, get condoms whether or not their parents approve. And in her case, she's talking about these condoms being passed out to kids to, A, protect teachers and students from infecting each other because of the rise in teacher and student sexual activity, and, B, in case that student comes from a family where there are syphilitics in the family tree. 877-876-PHIL. How do you feel about a school passing condoms out to your 6, 7, and 8-year-old, even over your objections? We'll be back here on the world-famous Phil Henry Show.
Phil Henry.
Phil, world famous Phil Henry Show. And on the line with me is Mavis Leonard. She is with us from Joyful Union Congregation's middle school, or excuse me, the elementary school. But you do teach at the middle school, correct, Ms. Leonard?
Yes, Phil. I teach all of our middle schoolers, and we also we have a staff that covers not only our elementary, we also have a preschool. So we do, we wear a lot of hats.
All right. You're discussing with me this this program in Massachusetts whereby the schools, the policy of at least one school board is to hand out condoms to 6-year-old, 7-year-old, 8-year-old kids, elementary school kids. And obviously there are, you heard the audio of those parents, I could play it again if you'd like, who are objecting to that.
Mr. Henry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. I have nothing but the highest regard for our parents. I think they are obviously the lifeblood of any school or the parents. But we also recognize, and at our school, parents agree, We have a private school. So the parents agree that we know, as teachers, as administrators, we know what is best for students. And we have a saying at our school, it's called back off and shine. And what that means is when the parents back off, the students shine. And so we have parents who come in and say, I don't approve of this or that. And I put up my left hand, I say, you back off and let the children shine. Because what my feeling is still, the best thing we do is teach these children, that's number one. And number two, keep them disease-free, keep our teacher disease-free. So we do not have these symptoms like skin rash or rash on the palms or a white patch in the nose.
What is that?
I'm sorry?
What is a white patch in the nose?
Those are symptoms, syphilitic symptoms, if you're syphilitic.
Okay, 877-876-PHIL. You were talking about syphilitic families, too. Let's go to William in Nashville, listening to us on WWTN. William, go ahead.
The whole part about the children having diseases and passing it on to the teacher and the thinking of we need to protect the faculty, the teachers, from these children.
Yes.
Giving them diseases.
Yes.
That whole sentence, that whole saying and thought is completely wrong. I mean, why should
Very
I
foreign.
Be worried yeah. about my faculty, the kids giving my teachers some disease? My teachers should never be touching the kids in the first place. The teachers are there to protect the kids when we drop them off at school. I know my kid doesn't know any
I agree.
Better. I mean,
yeah.
But
I agree. But what we're trying to do is it is very unfortunate that teachers and students now engage in fornication.
I'd rather not have it that graphic. We're talking about six-year-old children.
I understand, but we have to make sure that these children are not bringing into the school some kind of social, some rash or some kind of scabbing that they picked up at their home.
But you're giving out condoms.
That is correct, yes. In the worst case scenario.
But this isn't a college.
We have children with hair lice. And
kids are going to come in with lice. I get that. But these are children, and you are giving them condoms to protect the teachers from getting a sexually transmitted disease that this gentleman says it's the other way around.
Well, I agree with both of you when you say the teachers should not be touching the children. Obviously, that is very, very important. But that teacher, if that teacher becomes syphilitic, we have lost an asset in our school district.
You've got a teacher that has just molested. You've got a teacher that's molested a child. That you lost the asset a long time ago when that teacher touched that child.
I'm really sorry that teacher lost her job because they touched one of those kids. I feel terrible that that teacher got a disease for touching a small child, a 6-year-old. I feel really bad.
Are you telling me? Well, sir, I know you're being sarcastic. I understand, and I do understand you're a father. I'm simply saying that we lose a valuable asset if it becomes syphilitic.
The teacher
they're not an asset they're not an asset.
You're
if
right.
They're touching a kid. I don't need that person
they
in
are,
my school district.
Technically, you're right. But we are, can I tell you something? We have very few people now that are becoming teachers. We have driven people out of the profession by the way we have ruined our school district. What do we do?
You cannot have someone teaching who is molesting children. You can't do it. Whether they're an asset or not, whether they're,
you know how much money goes into making a teacher?
I don't care if it's hundreds of thousands of dollars. William, thank you for your call. There is William, 877-876-PHIL, world-famous Phil Hendry Show. We're going to continue here with Mavis Leonard. I don't have time for another call here, Ms. Leonard. But I will tell you that this is... Are you hearing at least what that man said?
Well, I hear what the man, Mr. Henry. I've been there and done that. I've heard it all before. I've heard parents say, I don't want that person touching my child, but it was the child that passed the gonorrhea. And so...
Oh, all right, hold on. 877-876-PHIL, world-famous Phil Henry Show. This conversation's taking a real turn, man.
Okay, man.
Phil Henry.
Welcome back here on the world-famous Phil Henry Show with Mavis Leonard, a middle school teacher from Joyful Union Middle School, elementary school, and their preschool there at Joyful Union Congregation in Bellflower, California. Now, we've been doing kind of an education thing here this evening, Ms. Leonard. We're talking about the Massachusetts school district that is passing out condoms, and this is Provincetown, condoms to students even as young as six, over the objections of parents. Now, you know that there's nothing more primal than the relationship of a parent to a child. Parents will kill to protect their children. Parents will go to their deaths to protect their children. And for a school board, something as controversial as condoms being passed out of the children, you certainly understand where a lot of parents are coming from.
Mr. Anna, I understand very clearly what you're saying, but I am trying to get you to understand it does not do us any good to have a teacher... What you are saying, if you pardon me, I'd like to go at this a different way, if I could.
Go ahead.
What you and your audience, if I read them correctly, are saying this evening, in order to find out who is a child molester, you would have them come down with a facial lesion. And I would say that...
Wait. What do you mean I'd have them come down with a facial lesion?
Well, how else are you going to know that that person... is molesting a child? How else would you know that that person had sex with a child unless they come down with a facial lesion or a white open sore inside their nose? You know,
I don't know. But these symptoms you're talking about, I guess I wouldn't know that.
Exactly. If they are wearing condom, they are not going to get infected.
Well, Ms. Leonard, I think that the argument is a little specious. First of all, you're saying that you're doing all of us a favor by passing out condoms to six-year-olds because they may infect the teacher with a STD, and then the teacher comes down with facial lesions, but you're calling me the bad guy because I want that person to be identified as a molester. Well, yeah, I guess I would.
So you want them to have sex with that child?
No, I do not.
So we pass out the condoms. So they do not, that child, your child, doesn't come to my school, gets out of your pickup truck or gets out the flat, off your flatbed truck and come walking into the school with a kind of a hunched over gait on account of the syphilitic in their family tree.
Yeah. I don't know who you're describing, hillbillies or something?
I'm talking about a lot of these children, their daddies drop them off in a flatbed truck.
And they got hunched over gates like they're syphilitics in their family tree.
That is correct, yes.
877-876-PHIL. 877-876-PHIL. Bill in Greencastle, Pennsylvania, listening to us on WEEO. Go ahead, Bill. You're on the Phil Henry Show.
Yeah. Working off what William would say earlier, aside from the fact that you have an apparent child molester, if you're wouldn't it be the responsibility of the adult to bring the condoms? And am I to understand that you're having children as young as 6 years old walk into a classroom where a teacher can say, who brought their lucky condom to school today?
Maybe you would say something like that, sir. I'm sure we would not. We would pass that out, pass a condom out, you see.
But you're passing a condom out insinuates that that type of behavior is acceptable.
Well, let me ask you, would you rather the teacher molest the child and the child give the teacher the syphilis?
Yes, I would, because that's God's wrath.
You would.
And that teacher deserves
And the child has it. How did the child get it?
Well, that's the thing. Molestation
of a child is a learned trait.
And if a teacher is molesting a child... Then the child
has to come.
There's no safe place, is there, then, for that child?
That child got it from you. And I don't mean you, but child got it from the parent.
I don't understand this. Thank you very much, Bill, for your call. 877-876-PHIL. I don't understand this conversation at all. Here is Mike in Canada. Go ahead, Mike. You're on the Phil Hendry Show, listening to us on CFRB. Washington, you're on the Phil Hendry Show. Go ahead, sir.
Well, thank you, sir. And how are you doing tonight, Phil?
Fine.
Good. Well, the reason I was calling is, you know, first thing is, in my opinion, age is...
876-PHIL. We'll go to a break. World famous Phil Hendry Show. I got very uncomfortable with the topic, so I got rid of Ms. Leonard, and that's the way that's going to happen.
Yeah, but that's not her fault.
I don't know whether it's her fault or not, but I was uncomfortable with the topic, okay? And we do that on occasion. I'm pulling the plug on this, okay? It got very graphic, syphilitic family tree, and white sores inside the nose, and we're talking about child molestation. Forget it. You know?
Like that is... Very informative. I mean, what about the informativeness of it?
What informative, bud? What are you learning from that, man?
Well, you find out about syphilis, you know.
Oh, are you worried about that? You worried you're going to have that?
No, I ain't worried about that.
Yeah, you are.
No, I'm not. I'm worried about you giving it to me.
How am I going to give it to you?
Use a toilet in front of me.
You don't get it from a toilet seat. How many freaking times I got to tell you idiots that? Oh, so you want to know all about, hey, what? No. Ain't going to happen. All right, 877-876-PHIL is the number here. Our web address, philhendryshow.com. That's philhendryshow.com, the only official website of the Phil Hendry Show, where you can get not only our live streaming video and audio here, not only our radio shows on the podcast, you can also access an enormous archive of material going back many, many years. And we have begun the transfer of 2001 into our archive, and we've got a lot of other really cool things. We've got a special we're going to offer to new subscribers very, very soon, and we've got a birthday coming up, the 20th anniversary of our show on August the 23rd, 2010. What a whack freaking, you know.
Tell me, well, what do you mean?
What do I mean? It's just been a really weird-ass ride, man.
You want to tell a story about it and everything.
Yeah. Where'd you start out, you say?
I started out up here, up the beach at KVEN Radio. It was a little tiny radio station here in Ventura. And it's so funny because, you know, we've almost come full circle. We're back here on the beach, only now we're broadcasting to the country, and to North America. And then I left there, and I went to Atlanta.
You were in Atlanta. You said that when you was in Atlanta, you met a girl there, and she let you...
Will you shut up about stuff like that, okay?
What are you going to talk about?
I ain't gonna... How dare you, man?
You said...
I didn't say it for the radio, did I? But I'm telling you right now, if you bring up something like that again while we're on a live mic, I'm gonna punch you right in the mouth. You got that?
I didn't do it.
Yes, you did.
Man, you can't talk about that.
I didn't say it. He told me not to.
You were gonna say it if I wasn't threatening you. Then I went from Atlanta. You want to hear the story?
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of what other girlfriends I told you about. In Minneapolis? Oh, yeah, okay. Well, you better not. Well, I went to Minneapolis for a year there at WCCO. And every single step of the way, it was the same story, man. We'd go into a town, we'd do the show, and we immediately got met with... What do you think we got met with, Robert? Did people love us or hate us?
Hate you.
Exactly. They hated our guts. They wanted us to get... Oh, my God. But the biggest reception was reserved for my hometown, Los Angeles. We were in Minneapolis. We came down to Miami. And every town, it was a gauntlet we had to run. But it was nothing compared to when I got to L.A. I'm telling you, the little old ladies here, you wouldn't believe.
They almost ran you out of town on a rail.
Almost burn you out and run you off, huh?
Let me tell you what happened. I wasn't in town one day. I did one show here in Los Angeles. That's all I'd done, just one show. And the next day, I was meeting a friend of mine for lunch. And I went over to this Jerry's Deli, which was over, there's about 85 Jerry's Delis for you guys who will be visiting California this summer. Please understand that when you see a sign that says Jerry's Deli, that's one of like 900. But this one was over in Studio City. So anyway, I walk in, we're sitting down, we're having lunch. One show I did, and this has never happened to me before. And we're talking, he says, well, how was the show last night? I said, we had a lot of fun. We did this, we did that, we did this, we did that. And there's a guy at a table. He goes, you talking about talk radio last night on KFI? Because I was on KFI at the time. Real loud like that.
I mean, like when you guys were eating and everything?
Yeah, really loud. He goes, you talk about talk radio on KFI last night? I go, yeah, yeah, you know, I'm thinking maybe the guy was going to say, oh, I love your show. He goes, that's the worst talk radio I ever heard in my life. The worst talk radio I ever heard in my life.
You kidding me, man? I want to beat his ass.
Well, I mean, and so my friend said, kind of halfway turned around and said, hey, just mind your own business. That's what I said. Who the hell's talking to you, you ugly bat? I didn't say that. I just said, well, nobody's talking to you, sir. You know, well, I could overhear, you know. That's never happened to me before, you know. And I knew when I heard that we obviously had touched a chord, because what guy is going to jump you out in public for your freaking talk show, you know, unless you pissed him off or something?
Yeah, but he might have been like a guy that's always listening to radio and like he's nuts or something.
Well, I'll give you that. I mean, this cat did seem like he was goofy. He seemed like he was, like, pretty shy, you know, a few functioning neurotransmitters, this cat. But then, you know, we got back on the air. But that was a tough one, man. It was like 3 months of, and I'm telling you, the old ladies in this town, Los Angeles is my home and I love it, but there's more old ladies in this town, more whiny old women, more really conservative people in terms of their listening habits in this city than anywhere I've ever been. And that includes Minneapolis, which just about takes the prize.
You said at Twin City that they have Swedes and everything.
Yeah, they got a bunch of Swedes. Why?
No, you said that they're tight ass.
Yeah, they are. They're real tight ass. You go to Minneapolis, they got these Swedes and they got these Norwegians, and they are the most humorless bastards you ever met in your life. Let me tell you what. So I can say that because we're not on in the Twin Cities right now. Now, anyway.
Yeah, well, you kiss off being on there again.
Oh, well, what difference does it make? I'm on again, off again, on again, off again. Minneapolis, St. Paul, they don't know whether they love me or hate me. I'm on, then I'm off, then I'm on, then I'm off, then I'm on, then I'm off. You know, somebody tomorrow is going to come and say, hey, Phil, we got you back on in Minneapolis. Say, yeah, well, that'll be 6 months, man, and then they'll pull me there. You know, I mean, they're just, you know, they can't figure it out in that town. It's not driving me crazy, so don't worry about it. Anyway, so coming up on 20, and then we've been back here in L.A. since 96, October of 96. So we're coming up on 14 years back in L.A., and we went national in October of 99. So we just passed our 10th year as a national show, you know.
Yeah, well, sort of national.
What do you mean, sort of national?
Well, I mean, you're not in we're not in Minneapolis or anything. And
you know what? We're Nash. Don't worry about it. I ain't in Annapolis. Like I said, man, we'll be back on there. Then we'll be back off. Then we'll be back on. Then we'll be back off. What happened? Oh, they flipped formats. Oh, they think, yeah. But I'm very grateful because this radio show, after having, you know, run that gauntlet, more and more people are enjoying the show. More and more people need this kind of a radio show, man. I mean, the rest of the stuff that's happening, how much can you talk about that stuff? I tried it. I tried it for 2 years. I tried to be a political talk show host. I was bored to death. How could my audience possibly have enjoyed that when I was ready to blow my own brains out of my head? And like I tell the story, man, our good friend down there in Houston, Michael Berry. Now watch, he'll drop the show tomorrow. But I'm kidding, Michael. He says to me, I got to get rid of this crap show you're doing, Phil. I said, well, I might as well just get back to doing the character voices. He goes, I wish you would. And we did, you know.
Well, that to me is iffy. I would never trust nobody. He'll probably take you off the air and put on Howard Stern.
KPRC?
Yeah.
I got to put on Howard Stern on that station? That's a news talk station, man. I got to put Howard Stern on there.
That's what they probably did in Minneapolis, though, put on Howard Stern.
Did I ever tell you I had lunch with Howard Stern once?
Yeah, what'd he say?
he asked me about Minneapolis because his show had been on the air in Minneapolis, and it was pulled off. His show was pulled off. He asked me about it. I said, well, they got a guy there. Tom Barnard is his name, who basically does your act. I said, I'm saying this to Howard Stern. I said, he does your act. He goes, everywhere I go, and Howard says to me, everywhere I go, there's a guy doing my act. I said, well, this cat does it, and he does it in that real sleepy, sleepwalker, dull-ass Minneapolis way. You know, so they kind of dig his thing as opposed to you, because you're the one thing they don't like in that town. And he said, what's that? I said, Jewish and from New York. I didn't say that.
Oh, wow. Did he really?
No, I didn't say that. But probably if I had, you know, it ain't like it ain't true. All right, anyway, world-famous Phil Hendry Show, 877-876-PHIL. Phil, crane rigger jury hears buried victim John Gallego's frantic call to 911. Oh, God. John Gallego's frantic 911 call came from under more than 10 feet of debris amid the chaos of a crane collapse that crushed his east side building and killed 7 people. Please help me, please. A building fell on me. Please help me. A tape of Gallego's desperate call played Wednesday at the trial of William Repetti, the crane rigger charged with 7 counts of manslaughter in the tragedy, riveted a rapt courtroom. Now, we're going to play this for you, and if you are the least bit sensitive to these kinds of things, please be forewarned. Here is John Gallego calling 911 in a frantic cry for help.
Police operator 115, is the emergency?
Hello? Please, help me, please. A building falls. I'm in here. Please help me.
Hello? I can't understand you. You have to stop crying.
Hello?
What borough are you in? Are you in Manhattan?
Yes, the building just fell on me. Please help me.
Sir, a building fell on you?
Yes, on 58th Second Avenue.
58th Street and 2nd Avenue?
50
Street and 2nd Avenue?
Yes.
The building is on top of you?
Yes. I can move.
Sir.
Hello.
Wow.
Is he kidding?
No, he's not kidding. That man was scared. Wiping tears, Mr. Gallego was in the courtroom. He told a Manhattan Supreme Court Justice Roger Hayes that he heard a horrific crash on that March 15, 2008 afternoon. He rushed to the window of his second-floor apartment at 305 East 50th Street. He said, quote, I see a huge thing coming down, said the Venezuelan immigrant, testifying on the second day of this man Repetti's trial. I couldn't do anything. The next thing, I was buried alive. My first thought, I was dead. Mr. Gallego, age 33, was pinned under hundreds of pounds of rubble when a crane across the street at 303 51st Street collapsed, flattening his building. He could move only his left arm and his head, but he testified, I realized I had my cellular phone, I grabbed it, and I called my girlfriend and 911 in that order.
He did?
Well, he didn't say that.
I wanted to call his girlfriend, man. Girlfriend, she lay like she'll come get the crane.
I don't know. Maybe he called 911 first, then he called his girlfriend.
No, but you see, the way you read it...
Give me that. I know how I read it.
I'm just pointing it out to you.
Yeah, that's what he did, man. He first called his girlfriend, then he called 911.
Well, he would.
Why?
To tell her to call 911. Hey, call 911. Hurry, I'm trapped.
Why doesn't he call 911?
Because he's trapped.
Listen, idiot, he could call 911, and he did call 911 as easily as his girlfriend could. What would you do if a building fell on you?
What would I do if a building fell on me? I'd try to get the building off of me. And it...
Get out of here, will you?
You asked.
That's what you do, all right, man. You wouldn't look to see if you got your phone with you, huh?
No, I know I wouldn't have my phone.
Why?
Because it's charging.
You laughing at me, man. Man, you're the stupidest human being I ever met in my life.
He asked me the question.
It's charging. Anyway, what a terrible story. He was pinned. Anyway, meanwhile, a firefighter, Juan Hernandez, a member of the Fire Department of New York's vaunted emergency HARTAC team, was searching the rubble for survivors. We heard screams. It was a man's voice yelling for help. And the rescue workers clawed through the broken concrete and twisted steel until they saw the back of Mr. Gallego's head emerge. How about that, man? This man, William Repetti, who was the crane rigger, faces 15 years in prison if convicted of the charge of manslaughter. So the sling broke, the collar plummeted, knocking out the crane support, the crane operator. And I got to tell you something, man. A friend of mine died in a construction accident. We were all very young. I was 20, 21 at the time. My friend was a year younger than me. He was killed when a crane hit a tilt-up wall, a concrete tilt-up wall.
Yeah.
And it fell on him. You know.
Did he get out from under it?
Did I just say he died?
Oh. I thought he pushed it out.
You don't push up a concrete wall, bud. 877-87... Never mind. The Phil Hendry Show, produced by Jason Rantz, technical director Ralph Rodriguez. Screener is Dan Northcraft. Bye.
Phil Hendry.